cleaner. Storrow tells investigators she used towels to smear drain cleaner on her face in a public restroom. Storrow made headlines on August 30th when she claimed an African-American woman threw acid in her face. A government report says home construction increased last month. However, the gains were driven mainly by apartment and condominium construction. For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNUSANews.com.
Tax problems, IRS notices, credit card debt? Get professional help from local attorney Chelsea Victor at 303-702-0591. The law office of Chelsea Victor provides affordable, compassionate, and professional representation. Call today for a free initial consultation. The law office of Chelsea Victor, redefining legal representation one client at a time. That's 303-702-0591, 303-702-0591.
Bill of Rights, Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
Worship and Warfare, Holy Places and In His Hands. Three praise and worship CDs now available through Voice of Many Waters Ministry. Call 1-800-205-6245 or check it out on the web, www.voiceofmanywaters.org. Each CD is $15 plus $3.50 shipping and handling. Call 1-800-205-6245 or www.voiceofmanywaters.org.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
Well, good morning, Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network, and this morning we're going to be talking about probably the most significant legal case of the last 50 years, and that is the case of O.J. Simpson. And certainly they stopped, you know, so much of the programming on television, so every day we could see the unfolding story of the trial of O.J. Simpson. There was something very strange, though, about this. I noticed that, actually, Rush Limbaugh called attention to it, and I verified what he said, was that Time magazine had a picture of O.J. on the cover, but they blackened his skin, so he looked very much like a black man. And, of course, O.J. Simpson's a very light-skinned black man, and certainly. So why did Time magazine blacken his skin? Well, I think that most black people today feel that O.J. was framed by the government. Most white people feel he's guilty of sin, and certainly I think that if we poll the people today, we'd find that that is a pretty good appraisal of it. And yet, have we ever gotten the true story of what really happened? Over this morning is a very unusual man. He's been in law enforcement, but he's also a detective. He's worked as a detective for how long have you worked for as a detective, Mr. Deer?
Over 40 years now.
All right. Were you ever actually in law enforcement itself?
Yes, I started out in law enforcement right out of high school with the Florida Highway Patrol and stationed in Miami, Florida. So I was there till I was 20, and then at 20 I was appointed chief deputy constable there in Miami, Florida. And then from there I went to the Dade County Sheriff's Office, where I spent 4 years and worked through the Bay of Pigs invasion.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, Mr. Deer has his own detective agency. Well, I'm going to let him tell you how he got involved in the O.J. Simpson case. So you pick up the story there.
Well, it was on the 15th of June, 1995, I was speaking in front of the International Council of Investigative Reporters and Editors, like Newsweek and Time. And there were 300, 400, maybe 500 people in attendance from all over the country. And I was their guest speaker speaking on homicide. As I did, once it was over, I had a lot of Q&As, and somebody said, what do you think of the so-called car chase scene going on here as we speak with O.J. Simpson? and the Los Angeles Police Department. And I said, oh, I'm sure it's something concocted by his lawyers so that this thing will go on for hours and hours and hours, be seen all over the country. And I said, then later they'll scream and holler they can't get a fair trial. My oldest son was with me at the time, and he said to me, Dad, he said, you're assuming that O.J. Simpson's guilty. And I said, well, based on everything I've seen, he is guilty. And he said, Dad, you never assume. You always verify. That's something you've taught law enforcement. That's something you've taught me. That's something you've taught everybody else. And he said, you're not living up to the standard of what you teach. And he was right. So when we came back from St. Louis, this was, again, just 5 days after the MERS and Cole Simpson were ongoing, I told at a staff meeting that I was going to be flying out to Los Angeles and taking Chris Stewart with me, and I was going to see whether or not all of this was true or whether or not I assumed that O.J. Simpson was guilty. So, again, it is now 16 years later. But within 2 weeks after the murders, I did, in fact, fly out to Los Angeles. I did go to the crime scene. I did look at O.J.'s house, which was a media circus. But when I went to Bundy and Dorothy Street, where the murders occurred, there were people driving by. But I decided that what I'd like to do is what I've done many times in the past 45 years, kind of live in the time of what happened, again, going back to that Sunday night. So I had Chris drop me off Sunday night at approximate time that they felt that the murders occurred. I walked down Dorothy, turned right behind into the alley, and now I was standing right in the back rear of where we know that the killer had to enter in the back gate, walking that walkway. Looking at it and looking up top, I see that one of the windows is open. I'm not knowing if anybody's there, but I wanted to feel it and see whether or not what we were being fed by the news media was true or whether or not that I'd made an inaccurate statement. So I pushed back some of the plants that they had in front of the gate trying to block its entrance and did cross underneath the tape that said, you know, a crime scene, climbed up over the gate, and as I did, I looked up and realized that the overhead security light was not working. It didn't come on. So I walked that walkway carefully. Again, it's dark. There's not a great deal of distance between Nicole's condominium and the one next door. As I walked that walkway, and it was quite a long walk, I looked up and down, back and forth, and tried to picture in my mind what it felt like for that killer to have entered from the rear gate. As I walked the final step and stepped up, next I was standing by Nicole Simpson's front door. And I looked to the right, and there was a picture window. And I realized suddenly that she would have had to have known who it was. And as I turned and looked to the left, I could picture and still see some of the blood where Ron Goldman's body had been found. Looking back, I see the sidewalk just a few feet from me. You could still see some of the blood that was on the sidewalk. And I suddenly realized the way it was being told by the news media and being told by the police department could not have been accurate if it involved O.J. Simpson. I sat down on the stoop and tried to realize in my mind all the facts that I had uncovered or had been told to me or I had read about. And when I did, I realized that O.J. Simpson could not have committed the murder. I did believe, though, that O.J. Simpson was at the crime scene, but after the murders. And if that was in fact the case, he was protecting someone. And who would he be protecting? As I walked back, I went out, climbed back over the gate, got in the car with Chris Stewart, and I said, Chris, I know you believe, as well as all the staff believe, that O.J. Simpson's guilty, and so does all the general public. But I said, I don't believe he's guilty. I believe he's covering for somebody. Well, here it is 16 years later. We're finally finished the manuscript. We realized that O.J. Simpson was at the crime scene, based on my investigation, but that he did not commit the murders. We've uncovered what we believe to be a suspect, a strong suspect, who at the time was 5'11", 225 pounds, 24 years old, and he was on probation at the time of the murders for assault of his previous employer with what? A knife. A knife similar to what, on my mind, could have been used in the murders of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman, but I wasn't sure. many years prior to that, in 2001, after spending 8 or 9 years on that thing, I wrote a book, and I felt it was kind of like a fishing expedition. Knowing that I had spent all these years and all my money, I wanted to see if I could get some of the questions answered that I had unanswered.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. William Deere.
As parents, we try to make sure our children grow up in an environment that is safe. Each year, many American children ruin their lives through the abuse of drugs. We can't shield our children from all that's wrong, but we can take time to encourage our children to say yes to life, education, and a great future, and no to drugs. That's from RDS Environmental, serving the entire state of Colorado. Call 303-444-5253. That's 303-444-5253 for RDS Environmental in Lafayette, where Tammy and her staff are on the air because they care.
Just a good old boy.
Hi, I'm Eric Cedarstrup. For over a decade, I've been the CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor of the Patriot Trading Group. And in that time, I've made friends with tens of thousands of like-minded individuals all over this country. Most like me, trying to raise a family, run a business, and make sense out of a world gone mad. I'm proud of the fact that through stock bubbles, housing bubbles, and financial chaos, our customers are prospering and doing very well. By keeping our prices fair and our service fast, we find that 80% of our customers not only reorder, but they tell their friends. Don't be fooled by hype and high pressure. Do business with a company you can trust. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-0592 or check out our website at allamericangold.com. You'll be treated with honesty and respect. You have my word on it. I'm Eric Cedarstrom, CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor.
Making your way. The only way they know how.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this morning, Mr. William Deere, who is an internationally known detective. One thing I wanted to ask you is, how did Von Goldman get in the front gate? Was there an electronic opening? Was Nicole able to open the gate from her home?
No, it was locked gate. Von Goldman came in from the back. This is something else that was not brought out. Ron Goldman, when he left Mesa Luna Restaurant, where he was working that night, was supposed to be delivering back Nicole Simpson's mother's glasses, Judith. And so when he left work, he walked out of the place of business, turned left, walked 3 blocks to his place, took off his jacket, washed his face, and then got into a red Toyota that was owned by a lady by the name of Andrea Scott, who was a model who was in Canada at the time modeling. He didn't own a car, so he took this car with permission to be able to use it, and he drove over to Nicole's. Now, he did not park in the front. He turned right off of Bundy onto Dorothy and parked just past the alley. Parked the car, locked it, got out, and entered through the alleyway the same way that the killer would have entered on the night of June 12th.
And the same way that you went
locked.
In. Well, would that gate have been locked, though, or was it open?
The gate was unlocked.
Okay.
Apparently, she knew that he was coming, and she told him to come in through the back, and she left the gate unlocked. Now, the suspect that we have uncovered after 16 years also knew how to get into the back and who also had a key. Now, you have to keep in mind that I'll bring you right up to the point of Ron Goldman getting out of the vehicle, walking through the alley, coming up, and starting to walk the walkway. But I'll stop at that point because it took us 16 years to get to this position. When I wrote the book in 2000 or 2001, it was published. It was titled O.J.'s Guilty But Not of Murder. I also knew that the book had a lot of theory and a lot of facts, but I needed certain concrete evidence to prove whether or not my suspect was in my own mind, as an investigator of 45 years, a major suspect in the murders of Cole Simpson and Ron Goldman. I had when we first got involved in the case and I realized that O.J. was innocent as far as I was concerned, as far as the murders, we started investigating 12 different people who could have been involved in the murders. We ruled out everybody, including O.J. Simpson's son. We ruled them all out. We went one night after this, and I was finally just about to just give up. We went to a restaurant called Jackson's Restaurant at 8908 Beverly Boulevard in Beverly Hills. When we went in, this was where one of the suspects that we had been looking at had been working on the night of June 12th. I made mention to the maitre d' who seated us. I said, I'd like to have a seat over here. How many people, by the way, do you hold? He said, we hold 88. But I remembered something important at the time. According to the police department and according to the news media, this individual who was a suspect had been cleared because he was cooking in front of 200 people on the night of the murder. But yet this restaurant did not hold 200 people, and even if it had been open 4 or 5 hours, could not have turned that many clients. I was fortunate enough to have the waiter who was on duty at the night on June 12th, who told me, yes, we only had maybe 20 or 30. We finally closed the restaurant on Sunday nights because of lack of business. This little restaurant was a private sort of place, you might say, for movie stars and people of importance. A very nice restaurant who was operated by Alan Jackson, who was a grandson of the famous movie star Alan Ladd. Alan Ladd Jackson had given our suspect an airtight alibi. Now, let's go back to our suspect. After 16 years of this, and I've said that our suspect was 24, 5'11", 235, on probation for assaulting his previous employer with a knife, there were some other aspects of this case. This man had been in a mental institution. He was suffering from a rage disorder. He was considered bipolar. He had abused and drugged for many years, even since he was a minor teenager. He had checked into Cedars-Sinai Hospital just weeks prior to the murders and stated to the attending physician, I'm out of my medication and I'm about to rage. Now, what does that rage have to do with it? According to Marsha Clark and Christopher Darden, the suspect was an individual who suffered a rage disorder, was an amateur, and this was an overkill. That certainly did not fit O.J. Simpson, but it certainly fit our suspect. Because of the fact he was bipolar, he was on probation, he'd been in a mental institution, he did not like women to lie to him, and we uncovered something critical. On the night of June 12th, our suspect was going to be acting as the acting chef. Normally, Alan Ladd Jackson would be the chef, but not on Sunday night, so the sous chef took over. And our suspect was, in fact, the sous chef. Now, we in our first book wrote that he had a packet of knives that he wrapped around in what's called a chef's bag. And one of the knives in particular certainly fit the criteria of the wound sustained by Nicole Simpson. But once we uncovered more details, and after the book came out, we received certain phone calls. One phone call came from an individual who happened to be the silent partner of Jackson's who said, Mr. Deere, yes, he said, the suspect, who I consider to be a major suspect, was working at my restaurant on the night of June 12th and left early. I have his forged time card. And I said, you're kidding. No. I flew out and met with him. He furnished me within weeks a copy of the time card from our suspect showing that instead of using the check-in with the machine, he hand-wrote it in June 12th, in at a certain time, out at a certain time. And that time clock was, in fact, working on the night of June 12th. Then within a week, I received another phone call. And that phone call said, Mr. Deere, I have what I think you need. What is it I need so bad? I have suspect's diaries. And I said, you're kidding. He said, no. And I said, all right, send me some copies so that I can compare the penmanship with an expert, whether or not what you have is actually been written by our suspect. And I said, what do some of the things say that's of importance to you? It's the year of the knife for me. I cut away a problems with my knife. In the first book I wrote, I said that I believe that our suspect suffered from a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde persona. in one of the pages that he faxed to me, it said, I am tired of being Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Now, you look at that, and when you listen to what he wrote while he was in the mental institution, looked at what he said about other problems, and the fact that he was an individual who was bipolar. But at the bottom of this box that this man called us, that he had purchased from a storage facility, just a plain box, contains not only the diaries, but it contained numerous photographs of the individual. And one of these particular photographs contained a picture of our suspect lying in bed, wearing the knit cap that we felt was the same cap that was found at the crime scene and had his dog in his lap. We know that this cap was introduced into evidence because it was found at the crime scene where Nicole's body and Ron Goldman's body was found. We know it contained hair from a Negroid. We know that it contained dog hairs, but it could not be established that the hair in the knit cap belonged to O.J. Simpson, nor the Keita dog. Now, when you're in bed with a dog and you're playing with it and you have a knit cap on, the hair from your dog is certainly going to track to that cap. And that played a crucial part to us as far as blowing up this photograph and determining in our mind that the knit cap that the suspect was wearing, in all probability, was the knit cap that was found at the crime scene. But that wasn't all. At the bottom of the box contained a knife, a double-bladed knife. Now, we know that, according to the medical examiner, it's either two knives or a double-bladed knife that was used to kill Nicole Simpson or Ron Goldman. When we pulled the knife out, it had been made numerous times razor sharp on both sides. Now, you keep in mind, what would give you the indication of two knives would be that one side is cut and sharpened differently than the other side over a period of time. But when I examined the knife, I looked at the top of the knife, and a piece had been removed. Inside been poured a paraffin-type wax. When I looked at the top of the knife and compared it to the Nicole Simpson's head wound, it matched perfectly. I then took it down to Dr. Vincent DeMille, and he examined it. And he is an expert in the field of knife and gunshot wounds. And he said to me, as far as I'm concerned, the hilt of this knife is similar to the wounds sustained by Nicole Simpson. And what was interesting, when I put the knife back into the sheath even the first time, was the initials of our suspect had been carved in on the side of the knife. And it was a boot knife, a type of knife that you could carry in your boot because of a clasp or on your belt. But it belonged to our suspect.
Well, it's a fascinating story as you put all of this together. So I'll just let you pick up the story and go from there.
Well, once I determined in my mind that this knife belonged to the suspect, I then looked at all the evidence that I'd gathered, and I said, all right, this is entirely, not totally different, but entirely different as far as I'm concerned as the ending of whether or not O.J. Simpson's guilty of the murders. So I set out to prove everything that I've said. Now I've taken book one, and I've gone into finishing the manuscript now just about a week ago titled O.J.'s Innocent and I Can Prove It. Because now there's no longer theory. It's loaded with 95% of facts, proving in our mind that our suspect was, in fact, a suspect that had been overlooked. And keep this in mind. O.J. Simpson, suspect, was never interviewed by the Los Angeles Police Department, the District Attorney's Office, or the Attorney General's Office whatsoever, even though he was on probation. He suffered bipolar. He had a knife. He was known to carry a knife. He left his restaurant an hour and 15 minutes prior to the murders. And one other thing is, when I interviewed Ron Shipp, who was a good friend of O.J.'s for quite some period of time, who testified, in fact, against O.J. in the trial, he said to me, when I talked to him, he said, you know, yeah, I received a call from Nicole when she was living on Gretna Green, which is the street directly behind Bundy, before she moved to the Bundy address. and said, she told me to come over, said, O.J. is stalking me. I could see him through the window, but said, when I got there, I looked around, and I didn't see O.J. So when I walked into the house, and I said, I don't see him, and she said, quote, you know, the more I think about it, the more I remember looking out that window, it wasn't O.J. She described our suspect. Now, who is our suspect? Our suspect is O.J. Simpson's oldest son, Jason Lamar Simpson, who was 24 at the time, who was 5'11", who was 235, who was on probation, who had quit taking his medication called Depakote to control his rage disorder, who had been in a mental institution, who in fact had a knit cap, who in fact had a dog with the kind of hair that matched that that was found in the knit cap, whose blood from a firstborn son would be similar to that of O.J. Simpson's, a man who'd been in a mental institution, an individual who suffers rage disorder, a man who admits Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, who had been arrested a number of times, who was, in fact, again, on probation at the time of the murders. But they made one serious mistake. They did not interview Jason Lamar Simpson, our major suspect.
But don't you think the police have made their mind up and actually, as you pointed out, they actually planted evidence to point to O.J.? In other words, would you want to cover that? Because I think it's so important.
Yes, I want to go to that now. If you keep in mind that a fight between, and this is the scenario that we believe happened. We believe that our suspect was upset. Now, why was he upset? Because on the night of June 12th, our suspect was preparing dinner for 13 people, Nicole, Arnell, Justin, Sidney, O.J.'s children by his second marriage, and the entourage of the family. We're all coming, including, supposedly, our suspect had hoped, his dad. But yet, Nicole Simpson did not show up. Now, this man is not the kind of person who wants to be embarrassed. So in our mind, he got mad, and he went over there. No intention to
thought,
kill her.
Hold that thought. We'll happen. Be back in just a moment here at the American Freedom Network.
Clean Dirt Grains and Seeds would like to say that many area parents feel frightened or somewhat intimidated to talk openly with their children about drug abuse. Parents, remember that open communication with your children along with love and understanding can in fact be the most effective weapon in the war against drugs in our community. You are the most important person in your child's life. Teach them to just say no to drugs. That important message probably brought to you by Clean Dirt Grains and Seeds in Sterling. They're another local concerned and involved business working towards a better community for all. That's Clean Dirt Grain and Seeds on the air because they care. Article 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
American patriots across this nation now recognize that our own rights and freedoms are being jeopardized. Yet what we are now reaping began at least 40 plus years ago when all future generations were denied even the right to live. With Amendment 62, Colorado 2010 Personhood Amendment, we shall protect and defend the rights of all people. If we are not willing to extend these rights that we hold dear to all people, and not only all people today, but all people tomorrow, then we shall have no rights at all. For then we shall have already relinquished our own rights. For if all men are not created equal with certain inalienable rights, then these are no longer rights at all, but privileges bestowed upon us by the courts. And if a human being is not a person, then neither are we. Personhood is defining a person as a human being once and for all. Vote yes on Amendment 62.
This message has been paid for by Better Country Services, preparing for a better country.
Sick of playing the guessing game with your vitamins? Tired of paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars for supplements that may or may not work? If you're a professional athlete or just looking for nutritional peace of mind, look no more, because you've found Bio Superfood, the next generation in supplementation. 100% natural Bio Superfood packs all your essential proteins, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes, and many of nature's special forces you need for optimum health. Call BioAge at 877-288-9116, 877-288-9116.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest is Mr. William Deere, who's a professional detective who, at his own expense, has actually for 16 years been investigating the murder of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. Now, before we go on, would you like to get out information on how people could get to your website, could get your video and get your book?
Yes, they can go to OverlookSuspect.com and look at a film that we just completed. The new book is titled O.J.'s Innocent and I Can Prove It. We're hoping to have it out by the first of the year. And I think it's going to be an exciting book. As somebody said yesterday, someone called us from the Attorney General's office in another state who we had sent a copy of the book to, and he said, it just blew my mind because it took 16 years to do it. The one thing I want to tell your audience is that I've never met O.J. Simpson. I have no desire to meet O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson, to me, was part of the crime. In my mind, he did, in fact, go to the crime scene afterwards. He's been protecting what we consider his our major suspect, his son, who's never been interviewed by the police department. Again, on the night of the murders, he was supposed to be the chef, the acting chef. So he was going to do what O.J. normally would do on a football field, running up and down. But in this particular case, our suspect was going to be cooking in front of 13 people that he could show off his talents for. But when it didn't happen, you have to take in consideration we're dealing with an individual who'd quit taking his Depakote to control his rage disorder, a person who had been involved in drugs, all types, including mushrooms, over the period of years, all dating all the way back to when he was in middle school. A young man who I've always said several times had serious problems that we know about. Now, when that happened, we believe that our suspect left the restaurant because we know he checked out early, because we have two witnesses who saw him leave early. And in a restaurant, and particularly a restaurant such as this, when you're only dealing with 30 or 40 people instead of 200, you can clean up the area of cooking like the chefs normally do, and they leave early, and they leave before the rest of the staff. In this case, he got into his Jeep, and he drove over in our mind and confronted Nicole, not with the intention of killing her. He came through the back gate, knocked on the door, and she was waiting for Ron Goldman. Whether it was just to drop off the glasses or whether Ron Goldman was there for other purposes. We know that Ron Goldman and Nicole Simpson had gone out dancing together and gone out drinking, and we also know that our suspect had gone out dancing and partying with Nicole. And remember I said earlier that Ron Shipp had gone over to the house because of the alleged stalker of O.J.? Well, what she really told Ron Shipp after she thought about it was, you know, it wasn't O.J., it was Jason. So when our suspect, if we're correct, which we believe that we are, and you have to be the judge and the jury of the work that I put together for 16 years in this case, when he knocked on that door and she realized who it was because she could see through the window, she opened the door. Now, the one thing that's so important is this. If O.J. in fact had been the killer, when he was at the recital, he knew that Sidney was going to have a sleepover during the summer month. And as a result, O.J. Simpson would have had no idea that at the last moment that the sleepover had been canceled. So how could he have planned a premeditated murder with three children there? His son, Justin, Sidney, and her girlfriend that was going to be doing the sleepover. So to me, a premeditated murder has to be planned and planned carefully. And it couldn't have happened the way the police department described, nor the books that have been written on it. But it could have been that when our suspect approached, our suspect then knocked on a door. Nicole sees who it is and realizes it's not Ron Goldman. So then she immediately tries to get him out of there. A confrontation occurs between him and her. Now, we know that Nicole has slapped the maid before, and we know that she has a fiery temper. And if she wanted Jason out of there before Ron Goldman arrived, they got into a confrontation, and she slapped our suspect. You do not do that to an individual who's bipolar, not taking his medication, who's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde personano. As a result, having the knife on him, if that in fact happened the way we feel it did happen, he reached down, grabbed for the knife that was either in his boot or behind his back, which we know he carried all the time, as well as wearing the black knit cap or the dark colored cap, and came down, and Nicole put up her arm to defend herself. About the same time, Ron Goldman enters through the back and hears the confrontation and hollers, "Hey, hey, hey," as he's running toward what's happening. Our suspect strikes Nicole on the top of the head with the hilt of the knife. Not the blade, but the hilt of the knife, rendering her unconscious, and she falls to the floor and lies in a fetal position. Ron Goldman is then trapped, and because he has no weapon, he has to defend himself. He's trained in karate. And again, the words, "hey, hey, hey," are indicative of a person trying to defend themselves in a motion of trying to aim for an ankle or a knee to break that of the assailant. But once you're cut, and anybody will tell you, once you're cut, you're then fighting for your life in whatever way possible. And Ron Goldman sustained 27 stab wounds. And when he did, and he was finally dead, lying there in all that blood, keeping in mind that the fight that occurred would have had blood all over the assailant, in his hair, in his nose, in his ears, on his clothes, not easily disposed of. But once he killed Ron Goldman, he looked down at Nicole Simpson, who was not badly injured at all, who could have walked away with but a sore head and maybe a few sutures, came to. And at that point, our suspect, we believe, put his foot on her back, pulled her head back, and with three strides of this knife that we have in our possession, killed Nicole Simpson, and then realized suddenly what he had done, because even he described in some of his comments to the doctors in his time that he spent in the mental institution that he did not recall a lot of things that he had done. But once he started coming out of that and realizing it, we believe that he called his dad. And his dad told him to get out of there, and his father, O.J. Simpson, not knowing whether or not the son was hallucinating as he has done in the past. So O.J. then left his house knowing he had to get there quickly because he was expected to be picked up by Alan Parks, the limo driver, and taken to the airport so he could fly to Chicago. When he did, he put on some gloves, and he put on the Bruno shoes. And once he arrived in the back, he came through the back gate, which was open. Our suspect had already left, headed back to Jackson's restaurant. He looked up and realized that the kids were sound asleep, so he wasn't worried at the time about the children. So as he approached, he sees Nicole Simpson lying in a fetal position. He takes off the glove. He bends down, and he reaches to check her. And as he does, the head goes one way and the body the other because she's nearly decapitated, and he drops the glove. And in fright, he looks up, and there, against the fence, is Ron Goldman with his eyes staring at him. Now, you remember that that is frightening to anyone. So he left knowing full well that if he didn't, he would be considered the major suspect. But when he got back into his Bronco and he hurried back to his house, he was in extreme hurry because the time was eating up as far as the limo driver, who was probably already there waiting for him. But more crucial than that, had it been O.J. Simpson who had been fighting with Ron Goldman, the Bruno Magli shoes would have sustained a great deal of blood and dirt and particles that would have then been transferred to the brake and to the accelerator of the Bronco that O.J. was driving. But yet there was no blood found on the brake and no blood found on the accelerator. And no matter what Marshall Clark may tell you, there was very little blood in the Bronco.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at the American Freedom Network.
For the finest in home security, you want Fine Line Security, a family-owned business. They install, service, and repair any CCTV system, including DVRs. Free estimates are available. Free security evaluations, including existing systems, emergency repairs, and loaner equipment. Call Scott at 303-550-8202. They also have lease options available for CCTV security. Always professional, neat, and excellent workmanship. Home automation wireless solution for doors and driveways also available. 303-550-8202. Fine Line Security.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
Zabel Construction is a family-owned and operated business. They're able to handle the big jobs and the small ones, from additions and remodels to decks and drywall. Over 45 years of combined experience, they're reliable and trustworthy. For a free estimate, email them at zabelconstruction@hotmail.com. That's Z-A-B-E-L construction@hotmail.com, or call Mark at 303-579-5325. Licensed and insured, Zabel Construction.
The Colorado Right to Life annual banquet will take place on Saturday, October 2nd at the Renaissance Hotel, located at 38th and Quebec in Denver, Colorado. Reception begins at 6 o'clock and dinner is at 7 o'clock p.m. Tickets are $75. Support the Colorado 2010 Personhood Amendment. For more information, call Colorado Right to Life at 303-753-9394.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest, Mr. William Deere. And William, just go right ahead and tell the story.
Well, when we looked at the Bronco, and again, everybody else has seen pictures of the Bronco, we knew that if O.J. Simpson had committed the murders of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman, as I indicated a minute ago, he would have had blood all over him. But yet in the Bronco, during the so-called hurried chase back to the house to make sure that he was in time for the limo driver, he nearly hit Jill Shively, who was at San Vicente and Bundy Drive, and she got a good look at the driver of this Bronco, and she said it was O.J. Simpson. Well, that meant that he was jamming on the brakes, hitting the accelerator. Had he been, in fact, the killer, some of that blood would have transferred from those shoes onto the brake and to accelerate. They did not. So once he arrived back at Rockingham, he saw that Alan Parks was there, so he pulled around and came in the back way through a neighbor's property. Now, we were told it was a 6-foot chain link fence. It's not. It was a 4-foot chain link fence and had prongs up. So when O.J., in a hurry as he was, he still had one of the gloves and I had the Bruno Magli shoes on, he jumps over the back gate, and as he does, he loses his balance and nicks his finger and hits the back of the bungalow several times. It was only approximately 24 to 30 inches in between the fence and the back of the bungalow. And that's when Cato Kalin heard the bumps on the back. We know that Alan Park, who was waiting and had been trying to get in touch with the O.J., who had not been responding, saw a black man come across the driveway and enter the rear of the house. We know that 4 drops of blood of O.J.'s was found at the inside the foyer of the back door in the walkway there. We know also that O.J. Simpson now, if he had been, in fact, the killer, would have been full of blood, so the blood would have been all over the floor, but it wasn't. And then he made his way up the staircase of white beige carpet with no blood whatsoever, and Dr. Henry Lee will back all of this up. He entered his bedroom, still no blood, but yet when the detective got there, according to them, and we don't know when it happened, there was a pair of socks laying at the foot of the bed, but there was no blood in the shower, no blood in the clothes hamper, no bloody clothes anywhere that would have indicated that O.J. Simpson quickly took a shower. Again, he only had moments because of the fact that Alan Parks was waiting to take him to the airport. We know that the evidence that the glove was found at the crime scene and the other glove he had dropped when he went over the back fence. That, in our mind, places O.J. at the crime and also O.J. coming over the back fence. But it does not make O.J. Simpson, in fact, the killer.
Well, what about the socks that were there with blood on them? That was the one of the important facts, and yet perhaps it tell about the socks with the blood on it.
And that's what I wanted to indicate. Now we've got only the pieces of evidence left, the two gloves. We know where they're at. We know that supposedly O.J. would have had the Bruno Magli shoes. But yet when he made it up the staircase and made it into his bedroom, there was no indication of anything that would have blood on it except for this pair of socks. Now let's go to the socks that were found at the foot of the bed. Two people claim they weren't there. One photograph says in its picture, nothing there. But yet the second photograph shows a pair of socks there. But when the socks were checked, the blood on the socks, and there was blood on the socks, came from Nicole and from O.J. Simpson. But the big particular thing that really is striking is that the blood that was contained on the socks contained EDTA, which is a preservative. Now, what you have to understand, your audience, is that when you go to a doctor and they draw your blood, they put it into a vial. Normally it's with a purple cap. There's little particles attached to the side. You'll watch as the nurse will shake it up. And when she shakes it up, it makes those particles in there preserve the blood for testing. Now, in this case, the blood on the socks did contain enormous amount of EDTA, which meant the blood was placed on the socks. Now, how else do we know that? First of all, the blood went from side to side on the socks, which means there was no foot in the sock at the time the blood was applied. We know that O.J. Simpson was taken to the jail. And at the jail, Thana Pritis, a registered nurse who'd been there 38 years, drew 8 cc's of blood from O.J. Simpson and put it into a vial containing EDTA and shook it up in front of O.J. and the two detectives. One of the detectives asked for the vial of blood and put it into his pocket. Later, that same detective, when he turned the blood back in, it only contained 6.5. What happened to the 1.5 missing blood? We also know that this same detective went to the autopsy of Nicole, where he obtained blood sample. Now, what happened at the time? Those socks placed there in the bedroom was the only piece of evidence that could tie O.J. to the case. Now, the blood down in the foyer of the house could have come from when he climbed over the back gate and cut himself because the prongs of the fence were in an upright position. Well, if that's the case, what happened to the Bruno Magli shoes? The only piece of evidence that could have tied O.J. Simpson definitely at being at the crime scene. When O.J. came down, he had opened the gate. Cato Kalin was waiting outside and helped load all the bags along with Alan Parks into the limousine. But there was one particular bag that did not go in the trunk. It was a gym bag. O.J. picked it up and said, I'll take this one, and he put it in the back seat with him. As they're headed to the airport, all of a sudden O.J. turns his back to the driver and said, it's awful hot back here, and rolled down the window from a back position. Now, at that time, we believe that O.J. Simpson threw out a little gym bag that contained the crucial piece of evidence, the Bruno Magli shoes. We know that once he arrived at American Airlines, the two people were interviewed and said there was no gym bag, only the items there. We know that when O.J. came back from Chicago, that he had a cut on his knuckle. We also know that he turned in the garment bag that was there and gave it to the police department. In our minds, this is just part of the evidence that I've uncovered in the past 16 years. O.J. is actually sitting in prison right now for 33 years for a crime that was nothing but a staged crime to involve O.J. Simpson. Now, I'm not one of those that sees a burglar behind every bush, but I've been in this business a long time. I was involved in the Kennedy assassination. I've done the Black Widow. I've been inducted in the Police Officers Hall of Fame as a private investigator. So I think I know what I'm talking about. When O.J. Simpson spending all this time in prison for trying to get back his memorabilia, and yet the man who set it up has admitted that he received over $200,000 for setting up O.J.
And we're going to have to cover that at another time. God bless. Thanks very much for being with us. Our guest has been Mr. William Deere. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
The people who are controlling the government of America are the same people who are trying to control your family's health care. You can sit quietly by and accept their plan, or you can take responsibility for your health. What would happen if you could no longer obtain the medications you're now taking? Would you be forced to join the ranks of corrupt agents just to purchase the medicine? If you're one of the thousands of concerned citizens who would like to know more about a natural way, God's way to help, drop by the Green Herb for a natural solution and all the information you need to make an intelligent decision. Or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. And be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. This is the America News Network. Tax problems, IRS notices, credit card debt? Get professional help from local attorney Chelsea Victor at 303-702-0591. The law office of Chelsea Victor provides affordable, compassionate, and professional representation. Call today for a free initial consultation. The law office of Chelsea Victor, redefining legal representation one client at a time. That's 303-702-0591, 303-702-0591.
Well, Dr. Stan here. Mr. Deere, are you? I think Mr. Deere's gone. Anyway, of course, the gentleman who set O.J. up in Nevada, he was the one who had the gun. He was the one who talked O.J. into going down there. He was a criminal. He was paid $200,000 to set O.J. up for this so-called alleged crime with... And O.J. didn't have a gun. He didn't even know there was going to be a gun there. He was talked into going down, and somebody gave the man who set it up $200,000. Who put up the money, the $200,000, so they could trump up a case to send O.J. to prison? Because O.J. didn't go to prison because of what happened there. They sent him to prison because they felt he got off after killing Nicole. But I don't think he ever did kill Nicole. I think most black people know he was set up. They staged a lot of the evidence. They put Nicole's blood and O.J.'s blood on his stockings, but it was on both sides of the stockings. You wouldn't get it on both sides of the stockings because there'd have to be a foot in it. And obviously, this whole thing, they framed an innocent man. And the police did it, and nobody wants to hear this story. And you're not going to hear this on CBS or NBC or ABC. And you better understand, we've got a great four-tape set on O.J. Simpson. Doesn't tell Mr. Deere's story, but gives you a lot of information on the fact that they framed O.J. Simpson there. And the police did it, and nobody wants to reopen this case. They've sent him to prison on a trumped-up charge. And the criminal who set him up, he'd been in prison. He was an ex-con. He was a con man. He conned O.J., and he's in prison for 33 years. Could this happen in America? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it could. Well, we hope maybe you'll want to get our four tapes out on O.J. We'll be carrying the Mr. Deere's book when it is available. You can get to his website. You can see a trailer on his new DVD that gives you the story. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the most important cases because it was set up to divide America, to divide black from white. And most people, black people, think that O.J. was innocent and was framed, and he was. And, of course, most white people think he's guilty because the media is controlled and they control our reality. So you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand how this... all works together, and the satanic forces at work in our society. We are having an all-day conference on October 17th, right here in the North Bay, North Shore, Monterey Bay, and we hope you can come.
We're bringing in speakers from across the country. We're going to get a good turnout. Looks like it. If you'd like to come, give us a call. You have to have reservations. The number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get some of the other material we have. If you want to understand about vaccines, you need to get my talk on the specter haunting America. You need to get Dr. Ayoub's talk on mercury, autism, and the global vaccine agenda. I mean, why are the people who are interested in population control wanting to vaccinate all those little black and brown children to save their lives? Why, if you want them dead, would you want to vaccinate them? Or, well, the story is there, and you'll be amazed when you hear it. In Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda, there's a CD-ROM that comes with the DVD with literally several thousand pages of scientific documentation. They know what they're doing to those little black and brown children. And if you aren't involved,